Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. I'm thrilled to have William Graper as today's guest. William is a life and style coach who blends fashion and psychology to bring a unique perspective to personal growth and mental health. One of the most sought after stylists of his generation, having styled the world's biggest magazines for 10 plus years, individuals, celebrities, CEOs, pro athletes, and LGBTQ plus youth have benefited from his creative and therapeutic approach. William, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd love if you could start off by sharing what you do and what exactly led you there.
So I'm currently a life and style coach, which is a blend, like you said, of my vast experience styling celebrities and magazines and the printed page and my newly built background in psychology. So I'm currently finishing up my program at Pepperdine University. I spent 13 years in New York where I interned and assisted fashion directors and really worked my way up the ladder in the fashion world. And what I realized over time is that I really craved reality and I really craved something a little bit more meaningful in terms of being able to touch people and help them with their actual lives. You know, with fashion and celebrity, it's not often that I get to see the final product affect someone's life in a positive way. So psychology and helping people out from a more personal, individual standpoint has really allowed me to help people and then to see, you know, that satisfaction, that smile on their face and that change in their life in a more real and firsthand way.
Yes, absolutely. And what led you actually into this space?
Well, so I was born and raised in Florida, and when I was 17, I moved to New York and went to FIT. And I just knew from an early age that college was important, but life experience, work experience was as much or more important than the degree itself. So I really took my time getting that degree in advertising and marketing design, and I really threw myself into work the second I got into New York. So advice I have for anyone who is a student or figuring out what they're hoping to do is don't wait till your senior year to start getting that internship that is encouraged upon you. It, like your junior year, they're like, you should be thinking about it. You know, in my school, we had a program. Senior year is when you intern. So I skipped that by the time I got to my senior year because I did that my freshman year. And that was because I just knew that I needed to be working directly with the people I wanted to be inspired and influenced by from an early age. So I started out at Interview Magazine interning, and then I went to W, and then I went into Vogue International before going out on my own. So I really paid my dues and I took school seriously, but I really took my time. It took me almost 5 years to graduate because I kept taking semesters off to travel and take those opportunities as they came about.
And one thing I want to highlight about that is the fact that it's okay to not finish school within these preconceived 4 years that are determined for us. I mean, it's totally okay to be able to go at our own paces, and especially like you did, take up these opportunities as they come to you because you never know when they're going to come again and they're going to push you further towards your careers. So it's such a great way to be able to take advantage of that and get that real life experience that people always talk about.
Absolutely. And I think it's worth noting that it certainly is a privilege to be able to financially support yourself and taking that time off. I had parents that, you know, I was very fortunate to have the help from. And I think I often sit back in gratitude that, you know, if I were trying to start out as a fashion stylist now at 35, it would be very difficult because the amount of free unpaid work that you do and the amount of income that you need to have on the side or savings on the side to work yourself into a creative endeavor. It just takes so much time and resource that I'm not sure I would have stuck it out. And I saw a lot of people not able to continue that were very talented just because of the financial situation. So I think what's great is that we are becoming a society in which everybody has access to become, they have references and they have access to these people in a way that they didn't have before. So you can break in different ways. You no longer have to go through this like hierarchy ladder system in order to make it. And I think that that's really allowing people from all different backgrounds take advantage of being a creative, successful entrepreneur.
You're absolutely right. I mean, being able to build connections with people who will help to push you further to where you want to be is so important. And I feel like people think that networking is such a cliche because anyone and everyone is like, you got to network, network, network. But it seriously ends up doing so much for you when you do it in the right way. And it can lead to amazing opportunities and being connected to great people years down the line, not only just now.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head about it being networking done in the right way, because I went about it in a couple different ways, some better than others. And I think the first thing I did was I had a delusion that nothing could go wrong, that I think potentially only youth allows you, this sort of idealistic, you haven't been burned yet. So you don't really have much to lose. So I kind of delusionally went in like, the world is mine. Let's just make this thing happen. But in doing so, I looked through magazines and I searched for the people whose work I was inspired by. And this is an attempt to start networking is what I'm trying to convey. And so I looked for the fashion directors that I was inspired by, and always in the credits would be their assistants. So what I would do is I would find their assistants on LinkedIn, or I would find the general email for the magazine at the time, and I would just start plugging in different ways of doing their names, like first name dot last name, first name dash last name. And eventually I figured out the way that they did their emails, and I would email these assistants, and because I knew they were the way into the big fish. I knew the big fish would never write me back, but I knew their assistants would probably be underwater and need help, and they would give me the opportunity. So that was really one of the best ways I broke into. So for anyone who's, you know, trying to get a job in something where you have access to credits, and all TV shows have credits at the end of production companies, like depending on what you want to do, you can find these creative ways of getting in touch with these people, which really helped. And then the other thing I wanted to just say is there's also networking that I think is not helpful, which is like going out and getting drinks with people.
Right.
I never find that to be, you can go out and grab a cocktail, you know, like one or, but anything that turns into like being out for several hours and like having a few too many drinks, I've never had a positive relationship built from that place. You think you're networking because you're meeting all these people, but at the end of the day, like no one's really taking anyone seriously that's out partying.
And one thing I want to highlight too that you had mentioned with like your first suggestion of networking is that you had emailed the assistants because you wanted to help. And so the keyword there is help. I always look at networking as a way to give rather than receive. And so I think that is the mindset that everyone needs to have when they go to network with other people, is not what can I get from this, but what can I give to this? And once you start to give and give, that's when the results start coming back. And it sounds like that's what happened with you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're human and I think it's a bit of both. You know, I certainly wanted to get several things out of it, but I also wanted to give because I was passionate about where I was headed. It wasn't something I was pursuing because it was cool. It seemed like something I was naturally interested in doing. So I think it's really easy to be of service if you're genuinely interested in it. I think if you're coming from an only get perspective, for sure, it makes it really hard to go in and say, how can I be of service here?
Absolutely. And William, what would you say was the most difficult part of starting your business while young?
Honestly, the way that I can speak to that would be where I am now in my transition of building chapter two, because I didn't really have difficulty in the beginning. I know that sounds crazy, but I really only believed that everything was a yes. And again, like I said, I felt like I had nothing to lose. So there wasn't really anything. I felt like doors were flying open. Green lights were always there. If I worked really hard, you know, the hardest parts would be like the hours I'd have to work would be like 18 hours a day. But in terms of actually building what I built, I didn't find that process difficult to break in, because I just naively thought, okay, if that doesn't work out, the next thing will be even better. And only in this chapter two, where I'm a bit older. I feel like I have a reputation that I built and I have to sort of metamorphosis into something else. That's when sort of the fear and the doubt creeps in and says, like, what do you think you're doing? You've already done this one thing very well. Well, who do you think you are? Do you even have the credentials to be doing this? Are people going to take you seriously? Like, all of those things creep in much more now than they did when I was 18.
Especially because, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, just being naive when you're young, that's something that happens. And I was speaking to someone earlier who also said when he was younger, ignorance was bliss for him. And so that was another thing, is that he felt like he didn't have any difficulty back then because of that ignorance that he had. But when we start to transition into new things after doing something that worked well for so long, that's when we start to worry about how it will turn out. And also too, that's when the imposter syndrome starts to sink in, as you're mentioning, about doubting whether you had the credibility and things like that to be able to go to this new transition. So I definitely agree that moving forward in a different direction can really be scary, and because you don't know how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. And you know, I was the person sitting in the room where people would say, I'd go meet with an agent and they'd say, like, what kind of work do you want to be doing? What do you hope to do? And I'd be like, I want to have a Vogue cover. I want to style a Vogue cover. And people would just kind of think I was crazy. They would be like, I don't really know who you think you are, kind of thing. I never paid any mind to it. And I accomplished so many of those things, which fortunately has allowed me to think differently and sort of what's next, which is, like we were just saying, where I am now. And I think what was interesting was I've always been able to sort of hide behind the magazine, the celebrity name, the designer name. And if someone didn't like it, it didn't matter, because it was my work, but I didn't have a vulnerability around it. The way that now, as I launch my website for coaching, which I've just done in the last month, and I hope everyone will go check it out, like, that has actually been something terrifying, because it's truly my heart and my vulnerability out there in the world for people to like or not like, to accept or reject. That feels very scary with nothing to hide behind. So it's been an interesting process of that transition.
I think that's a great point, especially because I feel like anyone can relate to that in any industry. Like, when you work for someone else and something goes wrong, you're just kind of like, eh, my day ends and that's it. I forget about it. But once you work for yourself doing that same exact work and you have clients who are unhappy or customers who aren't really satisfied with what you did, then you take it so much more personally, because it's your work that you're putting out into the world, and you're solely responsible for the satisfaction and whatnot. So it's definitely a scary thing to be so vulnerable in that aspect and put yourself out and hope to get the best in return.
Yeah, correct. I don't think that being an entrepreneur or being a freelance artist or business person is for everyone. I think it's definitely it's difficult to be vulnerable like that on a regular basis. And I think it's also just about getting honest with what our strengths are. And saying, you know, the adrenaline that was pumping through my veins in my 20s is no longer there. That adrenaline is kind of what kept me going for so long. And now that I don't have that, what is motivating me?
I love that. Get honest about what your strengths are, because that is something that's so important to remember for anyone who's looking to start and build a business, is that you really need to identify what keeps you going and what your why is, because that's what will ultimately keep fueling that fire.
Yeah, it's why I wasn't a fashion designer and why I'm a fashion stylist. So for those who don't know the difference, because I still have like parents back home that are like, you're a designer, right? is that a designer is creating clothes from yards of fabric, and they're coming up with that garment from scratch. And a stylist is reinterpreting that designer's dress that's already been made to create a whole other world based around this dress. So I am best when I can reinterpret other people's work and help them make the most out of what they've created. So in a lot of ways, I'm more of like a connector or a curator, or, you know, I'm producer. In those ways, I help people make the most of things, and I'm not great starting from scratch. And so that's why I love working with people, because it's really easy for me to see people's patterns, and it's really hard to see our own patterns. So I can hear someone's story from week to week to week, and then call back to like our week one where they told me something that felt very similar to this. And it's very easy for me to put the puzzle together. So I had to get really honest about the fact that maybe I'm not the designer in the room, and that's not my strength.
And I think that's really true too, is that you can almost do more harm to yourself when you start to focus on something that you aren't necessarily that great at, but you know you're not that great. But there's definitely a difference between failing and then learning from it, and then just kind of going and doing something that doesn't exactly align with what you would like to do.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody is going to be Sarah Jessica Parker, but there's a designer doing Sarah Jessica Parker's shoe line.
Yes.
And that person is not front facing, but they've made a really great life for themselves creating shoes, and that's what they love to do, but they're not the name of the shoe. So it's like, if we get too hung up on needing to be front and center and get all the applause, which I think in this day and age is a very, very enticing, especially for young starting out generations. So at the moment, I think that applause can be very appealing and attractive. But if we get too hung up on that role, then we might actually not ever get anything done, because we can't receive and accept like what else would be great that might actually even suit our personalities better.
Yes, 100%. And so now that we've covered really what was the most difficult part of your journey, with it being this second chapter, on the opposite end, what has been the most rewarding?
Certainly the most rewarding thing about chapter one was having dreams and aspirations as a kid that came to life and that I was really able to make happen. It gave me a lot of confidence and a lot of satisfaction knowing that I can create what I set my mind and what I sort of aim my dreams at. That was super rewarding. And now I'd say the most rewarding part is genuinely getting to see people's life change, getting to see people experience a different part of themselves that they didn't know existed, or having that moment where they're like, oh, I never really saw it that way, and now I can see it that way, and I can go out into the world and just close that gap between who people believe they are and who people actually are being. I often find there's such a tension between who we want to be inside and who we're showing the world we are. And I think that gap is like the definition of neuroses and unhappiness. And my favorite thing to do is to help people minimize that gap.
And then you end up seeing the positive results that they have. And it's such like a humbling feeling.
Yeah. It's just very cool because I've been there, you know, and I, in a lot of ways, I've done a lot of my own work, and I've always loved psychology and how people make decisions and how we present in the world. And I think my job as a freelance artist sort of told me I didn't really have the brains for the psychology part, and maybe I was just creative and I needed to just be okay with that. But now that I've gone back to school and realized that I'm at the top of my class and I'm actually quite capable of a lot, it's just changed my perception of myself and has allowed me to feel worthy of being in the room to help people in a different way. But also, I've been where these people are, and I've done my own work through therapy and coaching with another coach, you know? So
right.
I know where they've been. And so it's cool to help people with the phase that I recognize so, so deeply.
Yes, absolutely. And I love too that you mentioned being able to live out your childhood dreams with this success that you had, because I can totally relate to that. I've wanted to own a business since I was 6 years old. So once I actually started it and took it full time, it's kind of like, whoa, this can actually happen so young.
Yeah. And how old are you, can I ask?
Yeah, 23.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you're at like this beautiful age where you get to see these things come to life. And I think what's really important is to make sure the listeners and everybody knows that, you know, late bloomers are real, and there are plenty of people who are in their 20s that don't have any idea what they want to do, and they're literally just having their bills paid, and they can't get there with what could be more for them or what's next. So many people don't get to that place until we're 35, 40, whatever it is, and I think our culture says it better happen young or it won't happen at all. And so it's so important for people to realize it can happen at any time, as long as you're getting in touch with what you're really passionate about. I heard this podcast, it was like an Oprah Super Soul podcast, and she had someone on who was saying, you know, you can be the most successful, money-making, famous architect in the world. If you're not passionate about architecting, there will never be a point or a job or a success that makes you feel like you've arrived. And I just heard that in such a profound way as I was contemplating school, because I realized it didn't matter that I was really good at styling. It didn't matter that I had a lot of achievements. I wasn't feeling fulfilled or passionate by it, you know, about it anymore. So it was, right. There was never going to be a Vogue cover or a celebrity or anything that came about that made me feel like, oh, I've arrived, I can relax.
I think that's a great point, especially because, I mean, you're exactly right. Within this society, we're a very go, go, go society and all about like the whole hustle culture and things like that. And so it's okay if we need to take some time to figure out what we want to do, because I fully believe that the path that we're meant to take in life is the path that we will take, no matter how long it ends up taking us to get there.
Yeah. And we can be very clear on our path in our 20s, and it can change in our 30s. So I think that's also really crucial, because I was never on the wrong path. I was always on the right path. It just happened that the path evolved as I evolved, you know, yes. because part of it is, as you get older, you have the gift of reflection, and you have the gift of being able to look behind you at patterns in your life, and you get to see things a little more clearly. So, you know, what I realized is the dressing up and the styling and the fantasy that I loved about fashion was very much a result of how I was raised and the home that I was raised with and the family I was raised with and the way that I found value as a kid. And so as I worked through my childhood stuff, I realized like, oh, I don't actually have to do this for a career. I can deal with my childhood stuff and then see what's next, because we're powerful human beings. We're anything we put our mind to, the brain is so powerful that we can achieve so much in this lifetime. Like if we truly dedicate ourselves to something, we can make it happen. But at the same time, that can be, we can create out of a place that isn't exactly what we need. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%.
Ultimately, we have to be real clear on the intention, because you can create anything you want, but if the intention is off, then you could create something and then ultimately look back and say like, maybe I didn't really want that.
Excellent advice. And William, what do you think led you to your success?
Again, I think that has to do with childhood and feeling maybe less than. I think at growing up as a gay kid and feeling very different in my society and my surroundings, I always felt like I had to be the best in the room just to get by. I think a lot of minorities and people that experience discrimination have a coping mechanism that is the desire to be the best in the room so that you can't really say much about us. And I certainly was one of those people who used that as a motivating factor for success. And so that really drove the success hungry person that I was. And that is what has changed a bit, is I don't feel that same motivator. So now the motivation is like passion, happiness, service, you know, very different feelings.
I love those three adjectives that you just shared, or actually nouns: passion, happiness, and service. I think that those are really, really crucial to be able to tie into any type of venture that you're launching, because that is what will ultimately lead you. And it's so important to remember, especially with service, that anything that you offer or sell, you're of service to others. You are helping others, and you have to be able to look at it that way.
Yeah. And there's a service in everything if you want to look at it that way. I mean, for a long time when I was wrestling with whether to build on top of my fashion career or stick with it in the way that it looked, I had many people give me the advice that I could be of service through fashion, and that plenty of people are entertained by fashion, and that it helps a lot of people and people feel good when I do my job and all these things. But what I wasn't getting out of it was the satisfaction of knowing I was being of service, because I was never in touch with the final receiver of that product. So a hairstylist who spends their days on a photo shoot set doesn't get the same satisfaction that a hairstylist in a chair with clients gets. You know, when that person gets their hair done in a salon and they leave with a smile on their face feeling good about themselves, then it's a much different level of feeling like you're of service than somebody who's creating something for a page that's ultimately sent out 4 months later and you don't get to see the reader's reaction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like that instant gratification.
Yeah, I kind of need that, you know, to when I'm of service, I really need the human, whether it's instant or not, because certainly coaching takes some time for people to see change. But
right.
It's just, I need that tangible, I don't want to use the word payoff, but it is. It is like a tangible seeing of the good that's happening as a result of the work, which just really motivates me. And I used to feel bad about that and thought, well, if I were more virtuous, I wouldn't need that payoff. And it's like, no, I'm a human being and I like to connect with other human beings and it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, exactly as you mentioned too, it can act as great motivation and inspiration. I actually spoke to another guest on the podcast who has a product-based company, and on their bottles of their products, he has his personal company email address. So that way people who either have problems that they had with the product can email him directly, or happy customers can email him directly. And so he said that he loves just being able to receive all those emails of people who are sharing how the product changed their life and how much they love it and how they've shared it with family and friends and things like that. And then he said that he shares the messages in like their team Slack channel. So that way everyone can see it and acts as a great source of motivation, inspiration, creativity for everyone. And I just think it's such an awesome idea and something that we do need, because as you said, we're human. We do need that satisfaction from others and knowing that we made a difference.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of what's been one of the silver linings to this pandemic has been a lot of CEOs are spending more time with their employees via Zoom, via Hangouts and virtual Hangouts, and really getting to know what their team is going through in a way that they didn't have the time to before or the motivation to before. And so I think that's a really cool opportunity. And it is a testament to the human connection being crucial to successful business. As a CEO, you know, part of the reason why Ellen's not funny anymore is because she's not out in the real world anymore. Like, she's funny and lovely, but she's not as funny as her original stand-ups, because her original stand-ups were about everyday human interactions that she used to live. And now as people become more and more successful, they tend to be more and more removed from society, which is such a detriment to successful business.
That's a great point.
Yeah, it's crucial to stay in touch with the people who are on your team and your customers. And if you become too removed through success, money, fame, you can't maintain the same humility and the same connection to your audience. And that's a generalization, obviously, I want to point out. I mean, there are plenty of people that do, but those people are also very well connected to their team and audience. Like, Oprah is obviously one of the most powerful women in the world, but she's still very much connected to the human experience.
Right. So it's definitely important to not push that stuff to the side.
Right. And just to clarify, I love Ellen. Everybody still loves Ellen, but she's just the original. I go back and watch her original stand-ups because they were about everyday things like getting the pickle out of a pickle jar. We've all had to do that, you know, and not everybody can relate to the humor of being famous.
Right.
So there's a disconnect. So, you know, I just think it's important as we grow into the CEOs that we are to be really in touch with what created that success, which is the people.
Excellent point. If there was one thing that you wish you did differently, or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
I wish I'd known that I could have more of a work-life balance while building. I think what I did was I spent all of my time putting all of my eggs in the basket of success and building career, that my personal relationships certainly took a backseat. And in my later 20s and early 30s, I realized, like, whoa, I've never really had a long-term relationship because my long-term relationship has been my work. And so I think advice I would give to anyone is just balance of realizing that your work will be there, but your work will change, and your interpersonal relationships and support system is crucial to your success, especially when you hit roadblocks and difficult times. So I made a really conscious effort in my late 20s to take a step back from work to have a boyfriend and a long-term relationship. And that really was an important part of my learning that made me better at my job ultimately as well. But certainly giving up the reins of some of my hours during the day was a very tricky, difficult thing that I had to really force myself to do.
You're right. I mean, being able to have that work-life balance and being able to take time off is exactly what will make us better at what we do. And it's so crucial to be able to have those support systems and focus on nurturing those relationships that are of people who are there for us and can help guide us and support us in whatever dream that we have.
Yeah. And I might add, as long as there are people who believe in your vision and support you.
Yes. Like
because ultimately those people are really going to influence your self-worth, your dream building and making. And if you are surrounding yourself with people who bring you down, you will never get there. So I think what I experienced maybe earlier in my, maybe when I was, you know, 18 to 20, I maybe experienced that end of friendship. And I just felt like, okay, I got to cut this out because this can't be part of the distraction. So then I just really dove into work and made that my higher power. And ultimately, I came back around to letting people in, but it was really it's a conscious choice to choose the people you have in your sphere, because if they're not on the same, they don't have to love everything you do. They can give you constructive feedback, but if they're not rooting for you, get rid of them.
100% agree. I always say that it's so important to focus on building the relationships of people who will always be there no matter what. So it's like, no matter what you go through with your business or really actually anything in life, if they're not going to be there for you at the worst part, then you don't want them around for the best part.
Correct. Yeah. There's a lot of fair weather friends and that want to ride the coattails of certain successes. And, you know, I have a lot of clients who are early 20s and they want to know why they're in certain situations with certain friends that are treating them a certain way. And it's uncomfortable and painful. And I get that because I've been there. But what I'll say is it's also trial and error. Part of development is, you know, from your mid-teens to 30 years old, like, there are so many mistakes in that area because those are the years where you have to try things out and you have to get burned and you have to see what works and what doesn't work. And none of that is a reflection on whether you're a good or bad picker or chooser or person. They're all just a part of the evolution of growing up. Without that experience, you would never know.
Right.
Definitely. So you have to go through the trial and error developmentally.
Yep. 100%. So going along with that, why do you think it's so important for individuals to start a business at a young age specifically?
Well, I think like we touched on earlier, there is a level of energy and delusion. And I use delusion in a sweet way. But there is a level of kind of naivete and a little bit of arrogance or privilege, I think, in young kids and young people that actually does breed getting a lot done and does breed a fearlessness that I think can be really powerful. And I think if you can harness that at a young age with introspection and self-work and you come from it with great intention, those two things can be a recipe for like incredible success if you're doing that work along the way with being, you know, being that proactive entrepreneur. But I think it can also really get you into trouble if you aren't doing that mindful work as well as climbing the ladder. So I think there's a certainly a hunger and a fearlessness and a vitality to being young and creating a business. But I think some of the most successful young people I know enlisted mentors and team members that were older and had more experience in areas that they didn't have experience. And so being really honest, like we said, about what you do and do not know. And honestly, at 23, there's a lot you do not know. And at 20 and all of those ages. So enlisting the right team, I think, is crucial as a young entrepreneur.
Yeah, you nailed it. And I always say that one of my biggest things is always surrounding myself with people who are smarter than me. And that's how I was able to grow my marketing firm, because I hired people who were good at the stuff that I wasn't good at, but stuff that I needed and services that I needed to offer. And so being able to collaborate and work with various people who can help take you and your business to that next level is so important.
Yeah, I think there's something about being a young entrepreneur that also allows you to have your finger on the pulse in a way that somebody older than you doesn't have. And what's interesting about aging, even though I'm just 35, but there is, I can already look back and see the difference between who I was then and who I am now. And what I always told myself was, you know, aging isn't really a thing. And you can always keep up with the technology that evolves and you can stay abreast of all of that. And so you don't, there's no need to really age. What I didn't realize as all of these things play out in our society at the moment is that there are just differences between the younger generation's ability to have the finger on the pulse of what's really happening and of what's really important and of how to really get a message out there. That I think people who are a little bit older don't have the same curiosity about, or they're not out on these apps and social media places where, you know, K-pop is like signing up for tickets to Trump's rallies and stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't even know that that was a thing, no matter how well I knew how to use TikTok. So it's just kind of, there's a benefit of being young that allows you to have your finger on the pulse in a way that I think is crucial and really great. And similarly, it's important as you age as a CEO to have young people on your team to be able to speak to that generation difference.
Yeah, and be able to bring innovation to the company when needed.
Right. And I think innovation is something at any age, but there's certainly something around being mixed in with peers that, you know, when I was an assistant assisting fashion directors, I had such a database of other kids my age in our 20s that were the next wave of stylists working for the best people, knowing the best designers, knowing the newest, coolest stuff. And I was just in that with those people enough that we created this network together where we could bounce contacts off of one another and really work together in a way that once you go out on your own and you're like, okay, I'm my own business now, then you kind of have to act like you have it together.
Right.
You can no longer like, you know, crowdsource with your competition as well as you could. So there is a benefit to being sort of in a scene with a young generation of people where everyone's kind of doing it together and there's no shame or fault in not knowing. And then there is a pressure once you become an established quote business where you kind of need to like seem like you know what you're doing.
Absolutely. William, this has been such an awesome episode and you've shared such great tips that I know our listeners will find so valuable. But if there was one last piece of advice that you could leave with them for someone who may just be starting out, what would it be?
It would be to do everything the way that you would want it done to you and for you so that you ultimately are always staying in the place of your personal power when creating. For example, when I would do a photo shoot with women and I'd have 8 pages with 8 different dresses on this one woman, I had people that would always ask me like, how did you know to use that dress versus this dress? And I would say, well, if I were a woman, this is the dress that I would wear. So even if you're not the final result or the final product, the final receiver of the product, you can put yourself in place of the receiver and you can say, chances are, if I really love this, they'll really love this too. And that's a great way, I think, of staying in your power and of staying in what you're passionate about, that if you stick with, it's inevitable you will be successful.
I think that's great advice, is just thinking about if it's something that you would do or something that you need, chances are other people feel the same exact way.
Yeah. And when we try to read the minds of everybody else, I think we really stifle creativity and we get a bit stuck. And certainly right now, as we experience the Black Lives Matter movement and as we need to be inclusive of other cultures, which is just absolutely crucial, there will be things we don't know that are beyond, you know, do I like this or not? I may not, but another culture may. So obviously among your team, you need to have trusted people of various cultures that can speak to that same feeling inside of them and collaborate with those people to create a business that really reflects the ultimate world that we live in.
Absolutely. William, this has been such a great episode. And now I'd love if you could share where our listeners can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Yeah, that would be great. You guys can visit my website, which is williamgraper.com. And that's a place where you can get in touch with me and book a one-on-one session. Or you can check out my Instagram, which is William_Graper.
Perfect. And I'll share links to those in the show notes as well. So that way, in case anyone missed them, they can click through from there.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.